ॐ तत्सवितुर्वरेण्यं भगवो देवस्यादिमहि.
And now I'll read from Whispers from Eternity, a prayer that is very apt for the times that we're living in. Prayer demand asking God to be the President of the United States of the world. Our Father, President of the United States of planets, galaxies, stellar systems, and universes, thy democratic rule of free choice and individual evolution is bringing thy citizen children nearer and nearer to thy high ideals. Born in thy states of democratic free will, we inherited our celestial birthright of eternal, everlasting freedom. But alas, we squandered that inheritance, though receiving it would have meant attaining omnipresence, and instead imprisoned ourselves in debt consciousness, behind bars of sense enjoyment, evil deeds, selfishness, and small-minded, narrow patriotism. Teach us, Father, to melt the fancy-frozen boundaries of family, society, and national identity with the warmth of our love and understanding. Bless us, O all-wise Father, that we may live in the United States of the world with thee as our president, elected for eternity by the free choice of all good citizen qualities of our hearts, ruling ourselves through our own self-clarifying discrimination. Teach us to enrich our souls, our abundance, and our understanding by broadening the circle of our patriotism to include all earth inhabitants of every caste, creed, position in society, and color. O cosmic president, bless us that we obey thy love of life and respect with kindly hearts the freedom of all thy children. Fellow citizens with us, not only the good, but also the error-intoxicated, even the animals, birds, and fishes, the frail flowers, the mute grasses and jungle weeds, long crushed by the tread of cruel, unheeding feet. Master is nothing except exuberant. You have to enter into his poems with the full exuberance of his spirit if you try to read them in a staid manner. The contradiction is just too much. He starts you in some place and he just takes you farther and farther until finally you're worshiping the little jungle grasses accidentally crushed. The spirit, that's how we have to do it. The particular reading we have today about Judas and how we get confused about who we really are, and how Judas, even though, I'm sorry, I have to clear my throat. Which one is this? Judas is utterly confusing, and the interpretation that Swamiji and Master have given to it open it up in an entirely different way that makes it completely relevant for us. This is the story how Swamiji tells it, which is that Judas was a highly advanced soul. Jesus selected 12 apostles who are going to be the inheritors of his divine birthright, going to bear the responsibility for carrying his mission forward. Jesus did not make a mistake in perceiving Judas to have that kind of power. It wasn't like Jesus was incapable of knowing who he had. So we have to start from the fact that he was, in fact, one of those apostles, despite the way he behaved. Now, Swami puts a line into this reading. We must have great respect for the power of delusion. because no one is safe until they have achieved nirvikalpa samadhi. I don't know why this happens to me. All right. No one is safe until we have achieved nirvikalpa samadhi. Swami says we must fear delusion. He said not in the sense of cowering before it, but of recognizing how very subtle its magic is, its wizardry is, how it can draw us in. So the story that Master tells about Judas is this, that Judas was a more sophisticated man than some of the other disciples. The disciples of Jesus came from many walks of life, and it is said that Jesus was from a higher class. He had more worldly experience. He had more opportunity to mix with people who had power. He understood the ways of the world better. He was the keeper of the purse, which meant that he had some experience of dealing with money and was given that kind of a responsibility, whereas some of the others who lived in simpler lives and lower in the social order, they wouldn't have been able to handle, you know, the money that was coming in, how to disperse it, how to take care of it. But what happened to Judas was that Judas began to think that Jesus was not carrying out his mission in the best possible way. Because Jesus was mixing with low-caste people. He was not cultivating the power structure that was there. He seemed indifferent to the people who Judas thought could really help him. He picked random people that Judas would not think were really worthy of the attention that Jesus gave him. Whereas Judas thought, and it wasn't because he didn't believe in Jesus. You see, this is the critical factor that Master explains. Judas knew who Jesus was, but Judas thought he knew better than Jesus did about how to really bring the mission into the world. And he made several fatal mistakes. One of them that Swamiji describes is simply, it is, as he puts it, death to the devotee. When you begin to think, in this area, I know more than my guru. Jesus may know a lot about scripture. He may even be able to work miracles. But he's really just sort of hopelessly naive in the way that the world works. So what he needs is he needs my understanding of how the world works combined with his spiritual power. And then we can really make this happen. And so that thought, that's the beginning of how delusion begins to come into the mind. I'm completely devoted to Jesus. I completely believe in him. But he needs a little help from me. And then the dark force begins to think, well, he's good. But then, after all, so am I in this particular way. So, for example, as is spoken in this reading, Jesus knows he's at the very end of his life. And this scene that is briefly described in our reading today, Jesus is having dinner. He's with a group of presumably men, because often the men and women were segregated at various times. Mary Magdalene, who is extravagantly devoted to Jesus because her love for Jesus and his power into her have totally transformed her life. Mary Magdalene seemingly was a courtesan, which was a very high-level prostitute, but greater than that. She was a wealthy woman. She was seemingly a well-placed woman, had a lot of power and influence. But when she met Jesus, she completely repudiated that way of life and became his absolutely devoted disciple. Now, Mary Magdalene, having lived outside of society's norms for some time, was not at all influenced by anybody's opinion. She followed her heart and expressed herself as she felt to express it. She was the first one to visit the tomb after Jesus was resurrected. She had the power to stand at the foot of the cross when others did not have the courage to do that. But at this point, she has bought a bottle of costly ointment, very costly. She has wealth. And so she just comes into this dinner party. She kneels down at the feet of Jesus, and she begins to wash his feet. Now, it's important to notice, he didn't stop her. At any point, he could have said, Mary, you know, I'll see you afterwards. Not now, not in front of these people. But instead, he allowed her to do it. He must have had to cooperate. She was washing his feet. All he would have had to do was withdraw his feet, and she wouldn't have been able to do it. But he allowed her to extravagantly wash his feet, to use her long hair to dry his feet with her own hair. I mean, think of it. They're in a dinner party. There's a lot of guests around. She comes into the room, kneels at his feet, and carries out this ritual of devotion. And she doesn't have such an elevated reputation anyway. Then she takes this ointment, she breaks it, the jar, opens the jar, pours it over his feet. It says in the Bible, the fragrance permeated the whole room. So even those who are sort of thinking this is a bit unseemly, you know, or suddenly they're invaded by the smell of this extremely expensive perfume. And it's just too much for Judas. He just can't handle this. You know, this is not the way you should behave. So he can't really criticize Jesus right in the moment. So he finds an excuse. Well, that was very expensive. That was a lot of money that was wasted. Aren't we supposed to be taking care of the poor? And in the Bible it says he said this not because he cared about the poor, but he cared about money. But he also said it because it was the only way he could express an objection that wouldn't sound too crass, because Judas is not a fool. So then Jesus says to them, the poor you will have always with you, but me you will not always have. And Jesus knew how very quickly he would depart from that point. Now, what is happening here is also something, well, let me just finish about Judas before I go there. So very shortly after all of this, we have the Last Supper. Very shortly after this, we have the Last Supper. And at that time, Jesus is warning the disciples that he's about to leave them. And that's a whole story in itself that we don't have time to go into. But Jesus says, one of you sitting at the table with me will betray me. And the disciples are all alarmed by this, you can well imagine. And they commission John, who apparently had a closer relationship with Jesus and could get away with things that the others didn't think they could get away with. I mean, it's all very human. I've lived with Swami for enough years. I know how all this plays itself out. In life with Master, Swamiji was often commissioned to be the one who had to say things to Master that no one else had the nerve to say. So John says to Jesus, you know, one of us will betray you? Who is that? And then Jesus says quietly to John, the one in who, with, there's various versions, but I'll dip this bread in the oil and hand it to him, and that's the one. So he indicates Judas. And the others don't quite know, because then Jesus says to Judas, that which you are about to do, do quickly. Which is, on another level, so profound, because Jesus is looking right at Judas and says, I know what's going to happen. And much later in the life of Judas, probably in the future incarnations of Judas, or even that very night, he remembers that Jesus essentially commissioned him to do what he was about to do. That which you are about to do, do quickly. Jesus knew what it was, and Judas must have known that Jesus read his heart, because he stood up and he left. And the other disciples thought that Judas had been sent on some errand, maybe to get something else for dinner or something like that. But actually, Jesus had sent him out to go to the authorities, to get the Roman cohort, to bring them to the Garden of Gethsemane to arrest Jesus. Now, according to Master, this is what Judas was thinking. He was not thinking that Jesus would be crucified. He was not thinking that Jesus would die on the cross. He was thinking that he was going to force Jesus' hand. He was going to confront Jesus' spiritual power with worldly power, and Judas' expectation was that Jesus would rise with his spiritual power and show himself to the world, overcome that worldly threat, And then they would all ride together in the chariot of victory to wherever Jesus thought they ought to go. But instead, Jesus allowed himself to be taken. Even now, legions of angels could rescue me, Jesus said, but it is the will of my Father that you have power over me. So Jesus was crucified. And immediately after, Judas committed suicide. And the reason he did that was because he suddenly realized everything he'd been thinking was wrong. And perhaps, no one knows, perhaps in that moment he remembered Jesus, what was the look in Jesus' eyes when he looked right at Judas and said, "That which you are about to do, do quickly." The love of his guru had never changed, even though Judas had turned his back on it. Now, there's countless ways that this can be taken, but here is the point in the moment, in our time, in our place, that is extremely important for us to understand. Ever since we've been in this shelter-in-place situation, I've been doing these morning broadcasts. During the last week, when everything, it never rains, but it pours. You know, we're already the country's under this tremendous stress. So then we have this sudden sort of ripping open of some of the dark forces that have been lurking in our country for such a long time that are different than the whispers that I was reading. The United States of all consciousness, in which we love one another as God's children. And there has been a force, which is an appropriate force, to stand up in a human way, to say no more, this we will not tolerate. Love and goodness must prevail. But also, through all of this, I and others who represent Master's teachings have to say over and over again, this is a divine cosmic moment in which something completely different is being asked of us. What's being asked of us is not merely that we rearrange the order of this society, which God knows is desperately needed to overcome bigotry and race hatred and other corrosive, unconscionable influences that rule too much of this world. But what's really being asked of us is that we repudiate the entire premise that the ego is in charge, that it's up to us to decide, that if I want it, I can have it. We are all children of God. We are all here on a divine mission. We have one purpose in life, and that is to attune ourselves to a greater reality of which we are all a part, and to love each other, not merely with tolerance and the ability, you know, not to do our worst, but heart to heart. And that is only possible when individually we understand who we are. We are within ourselves. In the autobiography of a yogi, Master says very powerfully, Jesus and Babaji are well aware of the disturbing direction of materialism on this planet and have planned the salvation of this planet through inner communion with God. This is the Kriya Yoga message. This is the original teachings of Jesus. This is the true teachings of Krishna. All of these fragmenting into religions and to races and to cultures and to castes, none of that means anything in the eyes of the divine. We are all moving forward, each in our own way, toward the same one blissful reality. In other of Master's poems, he talks about even our error-torn brothers who turn to a life of crime and must be restrained from being allowed. Master talks about bullies that require a world police force to keep them from taking advantage of their weaker brothers, even the jungle grasses that are crushed by heedless feet, you know, need to be loved and nurtured. We need to live in harmony with this world, but that harmony is not going to come. That's not going to come from my dominating you with my point of view, or then you dominating me with your point of view. And just ego after ego, we just keep trading. That's the delusion that we're all caught in, is that my opinion is better than yours and your opinion is worse than mine. You know, that's not where any of this will ever be solved. It will be solved one by one when we shift our consciousness. You know, as long as we're looking like Judas was looking, that material power is the real power, we'll just each be reaching for it and trying to have more than the other one. It's only when we go inside and realize that our union is first with the divine, and that it's with that power that we relate to each other and love each other. Delusion is very subtle. And we can get all caught up into my ego opinion is better than yours. And in fact, some ego opinions are better than others because they manifest more of the divine truth. But the corrective that God is calling us to is to himself. Because what we've been doing over many decades now, you know, in this world, we're shifting. We're coming out of this age of Kali Yuga, where form is the truth. You're a dark-skinned person. I'm a white-skinned person. You have a yellow skin. I have a white skin. You're a native people, and I'm someone who's come in later. Just all these different ways of dividing ourselves up. Jesus Christ is the only answer. No, he's not. You know, it's an embarrassment. You know, this is a cosmic dream. And every one of us is exactly the same in our nature. In our Festival of Light, we read it later. We are all equal before God. And not, you know, God does not love Jesus Christ, Lord Krishna, or the great saints of any religion any more than he loves those among us who have sinned most greatly. Each one of us is moving in our own way, ignorant or wise, from the delusion of separateness to the truth of our oneness. And we have to respect and support and respond appropriately to every individual on that journey. And this is why Master speaks of there are bullies and bullies must be restrained. Our error-intoxicated brothers who turn to a life of crime must receive an appropriate response to a wrong action so that they can also gradually learn that we are not separate. We are all part of a greater reality, and that which I do affects everyone. And the only way this change is ever going to come about is by a change of consciousness. And it looks small. You know, when you think about the world, when you think about the presidents and the prime ministers and the military forces and the big money and all of these different things that we're all just reading about every day about whose conspiracy is really the one that happens, I'll tell you, God's conspiracy is the only one that's really happening. And everyone else is just an instrument of that. And some of them are darker than others. And I'm not even going to say who's darker than others. Who knows who's darker than others? It's there for one reason. It's to drive us into an inner reality and to seek a truth that transcends all of these waves. Because once even one person becomes strongly established in that kind of power, it makes the power of this world like nothing. Just as Jesus stood there before Pontius Pilate, and Pontius Pilate says to him, you know, help me, because Jesus was not cooperating. Pontius Pilate wanted to release Jesus, but Jesus wouldn't help him. He wouldn't answer the questions the way he wanted to. He wouldn't do anything to save himself. And that's when Jesus said to Pontius Pilate, even now, legions of angels could rescue me. But it is not God's will. But who remembers Pontius Pilate except in relationship to Jesus? Who remembers any of those priests who were so powerful at the time? No one knows any of their names or cares about them at all. Who do they remember? Jesus. And then all those who understood who he was, and I don't mean those who speak in his name nowadays, but all those who really knew who he was, who lived where Jesus lived, or tried to walk where he truly walked. I and my Father are one. Be therefore perfect, even as your Father in heaven is perfect. My kingdom is not of this world. But the more we open our hearts to that truth, the more then we bring that power into this world, and that is the transforming power. The power of love, the power of kindness, the power of courage that's based on a transcendent understanding of our reality and the reality of this world. Judas became free, Master said. He was reincarnated in the 1800s. He was sent to Ramakrishna, and he was liberated in that life. So it took him a little while, but he was one of the apostles. He knew. Even that great sin, which Swami writes, Christians will condemn him forever. God did not condemn him. Judas learned and repented by the power of divine love. That's the greatest power that there is. God's unconditional, never-ending, ever-patient love for each one of us. And our duty is singular, which is to attune ourselves to that love and to be instruments of it into this world. That is the only solution. God bless you.
I pass my life as a stranger, Lord, roamed far in foreign lands. Far, Lord, far, too far. Only he who knows he's far from home, only he, Lord, understands. Only he who knows he's far from home feels the earth and understands. Sometimes a stranger did take me in, then love I thought was near. Love, Lord, where is love? Like the winds upon the desert sands, whisper hope, then disappears. Like soft winds, breathe on the desert sands. So love sighs, then disappears. Sometimes a child laughed, and I did pause, and dreamed of joys at home. Joys, Lord, only a dream. For what joy is there without your smile? Empty like the ocean foam. For what joy is there without your smile? You're the sea, all else is foam. How long must I be a wanderer, Lord? You know where I belong. You know, Lord, yes, you know. is where my Lord's sweet presence is. I've grown tired of stranger songs. Home is where my Lord's sweet presence is. Bless me that I hear your song.